Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
I want you to listen to me very carefully. It is a Friday. It is a Friday before the Seahawks' first home game of the season, in which fans are going to be back there for the first time since 2019. I'm going to need you guys to get a little more excited. I'm sensing a serious lack of hype, a serious lack of excitement and energy right now. I need some fired up callers. That's exactly what I need to hear.
Once again, we have callers,
but I want to hear some fiery opinions on this Friday. So once again, I'm going to ask very nicely, but I'm going to tell you what, you better bring it.
Well, where's Rob Dog? Where's Joseph in Tacoma?
Guys.
Where's Colin, a.k.a. Mark,
guys,
a.k.a. Colin? Are these people?
Here's what I need to hear. I need to hear you tell me. Put it out there. Put yourself on the line here. Who's the most important player for the Seahawks this weekend? You choose one. Choose one player. The game is on this guy's back, this guy's shoulders. Who is the most important player for the Seahawks this weekend? I need you to think of a name, and then I need you to call. Be ready with that answer and be fiery with it. 206-421-3776. Again, that number is 206-421-3776. Let's go to line one. Christian in the 206. Christian, what's up? Who's the most important player for the Seahawks this weekend?
You guys know that I'm coming with the juice on Friday, baby. It's Blue Friday. It's time to go. It's the first home opener for the fans to be here. And the 32 train is going to take everybody home, man. Chris Carson, player of the game, baby.
That's a great answer. I have not heard Chris Carson yet, nor have I seen it on the text line as a possible answer for most important player.
Now, Christian, why is Chris Carson your pick?
Oh, I don't think we have Chris anymore. Go ahead. Explain why Chris Carson is a good answer.
If Chris Carson's a good answer, the reason for that being is because you want to maintain balance offensively. You want to keep the Tennessee Titans offense off of the field. You want to limit the amount of yardage that Derrick Henry gets in the game. How about you do that by not letting him see the field? That could be one great way of doing that, not giving them as many bites at the apple. So when you look at it from this perspective, I think that Chris Carson brings great balance to your group. It also opens everything else in terms of what you want to do. Shane Waldron has obviously shown that this offense is not going to abandon the run game, that the run game is a very important key aspect to this offense in terms of what it sets up. It sets up its naked bootleg game. It sets up the play action game. It sets up the screen game. Overall, you need to have a really good day for Chris Carson.
Here's how I need you to think of the question, because it's how important this game is in a really tough slate, a really tough schedule. The Seahawks don't win this game unless blank has the game of his life. I have my answer for that, but I want to hear your guys's. So here's the number, 866-979-3776. You can also call 206-421-3776. Our question is, who is the most important player? Most important player for the Seahawks this weekend? Let's go to line two, Zach in Kirkland. Zach, who's the most important player for the Hawks this weekend?
Hi, Jake. Hi, Stacy.
Hi.
What's up, Zach?
If we want the Hawks to go 2-0, undefeated, baby, Quandre Diggs has to have a defensive player of the year caliber game.
Okay, I like it. Now, what exactly, Zach, do you want to see from Quandre Diggs? What does he need to bring to the table?
Two things. The first, eliminate the big play. We can't have A.J. Brown and Julio Jones running amok in the backfield in that latter half of the field. Two, he has to be a dominant tackling force. We can't let the King Henry move through the line like we've seen Dalvin Cook and others do before. He's got to be the hammer.
I love it, Zach. I love it, man. That's a great breakdown. That's a great call right there. Zach, you brought it today. Now, with Quandre Diggs, I agree. He's got to be the one guy. You talked about Earl Thomas being such a force and being such an impact player in the middle of your defense, dictating the coverage and making it hard on quarterbacks. Quandre Diggs has got to do the same in terms of making life hard on Ryan Tannehill and having to try to manipulate his eyes and also being able to lay the wood on the running backs, on Derrick Henry. And one thing that Quandre Diggs has to do, he's got to come downhill and run hard and run violent, which is something that isn't even a question. He does that every single game. Can he do that and fill the alley while also being under control enough where he can make the tackle and not just get blown by, or have it be a situation where Derrick Henry is able to run through an arm tackle. Quandre Diggs has to be a sniper when it comes to the run game. I agree with you, Zach. He's definitely got to get involved in this thing.
What I love about what the callers are doing right now with this answer too is it's not just which player you're most excited to see, is which player like needs to play well. You're facing the Tennessee Titans. They've got some insane offensive weapons. They've got Julio Jones. They've got A.J. Brown. They've got Derrick Henry. I would say they've got Ryan Tannehill. You know what? They've got Ryan Tannehill. Give it to Ryan there. You're going to need some very important players here. It's not just who you want to see. It's who you need to see have a good game. Going to line one, Colton, who is the most important player of the Seahawks this weekend?
Yeah, thanks, Stacey. I think who needs to show up this Sunday is Trey Flowers. You guys talked about him a little bit when he had bump on in the last hour. We really need Trey to take that step forward this game, shut down Julio or AJ, depending on who he's on, so that we can give safety help over the top to what receivers really beating us up. I'm not so concerned about the run this Sunday. Feel comfortable in our front seven. But yeah, Trey Flowers, we need a big step forward, not just being there when the ball is there, but making a play on the ball when it shows up on his side of the field.
Colton, you're calling all the way from Illinois, correct?
All the way from Illinois.
That's what I'm talking about. I love it, man. I love it. Appreciate the phone call, and I think this is a great call.
Thanks, Colton.
In terms of isolating and highlighting the cornerbacks. And look, we've talked about, oh, well, you know, they need help. You need to be able to mask the cornerback situation. Well, no. Just like Colton was talking about, how about these cornerbacks step up and make plays? How about Trey Flowers shows that he is the right man for the job, and that there's been this conversation of when is Sidney Jones going to maybe get into the mix, and is Trey Flowers and DJ Reed good enough to take the mantle forward through the course of the game, through the course of the season? This is an opportunity for those guys to make a statement.
All right, going to D and Bothell. D, who is the most important player for the Seahawks this weekend?
It's the player. I think it's going to be the 12s. Mm. I think that the 12s are going to be crazy loud in there, and I think it's going to be like the old days. It's just going to be deafening, and the Titans offense is going to have a heck of a time getting anything going.
A great point from D. This is the first time fans are getting back to this stadium since 2019. You want to talk about something that was clearly missing last year? Fan noise, fan presence. I mean, that affects players.
It does. It affects it, and more specifically on the defensive side, where you have the advantage when it comes to the pass rush. Offenses are trying to communicate. It's difficult. It's difficult to be able to be in a loud, crazy, frenzied stadium where you can barely hear, Stacey, from me to you. Mm-hmm. I'm yelling as loud as I can, and you can barely hear me. It makes it extremely difficult. So if you're trying to do that, and you're, you know, Jamal Adams, you're Rasheem Green, you're Daryl Taylor, you're trying to get the Carlos Dunlap, you're trying to get the advantage of rushing the passer, the 12s play a big, big factor into that. So I agree. The 12s are definitely going to have a big role in this game.
Love that angle from D. Let's go to Jim in Kenmore. Jim, who's the most important player for the Seahawks?
Well, I think that this time around, it's got to be Puna Ford. We've got to collapse the front line. We can't let Derrick Henry even get out past the line of scrimmage. And we got to make Mr. Tannehill just more than a little uncomfortable. And I think he does that coming from the middle.
Mm. I love it. You need to be able to, you're right, you need to be able to have that interior pass rush to make him uncomfortable. Now, do you believe that Puna Ford is going to be able to get that done?
I think so. You know, I just have so much respect for this guy. I mean, he comes in as an undrafted guy. He was just such a leader in college, and he's just shown how he has grown and developed every year. And he's strong, and he's low, and he's got the leverage. I think he can just tear things up.
All right. I love it. I love it, Jim. Thanks,
Jim.
Thanks for the call. You're right. They're going to have to be big, and they did a great job last week against Carson Wentz, and particularly Brian Monet, out of all people, was the surprise in terms of being that disruptive force in the interior. Would love to see Puna be very active in this game.
Yeah, Jim and I agree on our most important player. Going to line six, it's Joseph in Tacoma. Joseph, who's the most important player?
Most important player. All right, guys, how are you guys doing today?
Well.
We are doing great.
All right, so before I answer that real quick, Jake, your Jake-ism, outside of listening to John Clayton continuously butcher names, which is essentially must-hear radio, I actually borrow your Jake-isms at work on a regular basis.
You do?
Oh, yes.
That's what
I'm... And in celebration of that, it being Friday.
That is what I'm talking about.
Jack of all aces needs to be the tight end, Gerald Everett, simply because why you guys have been talking about how Houston, or how the Titans are not going to allow DK and Lockett to beat them. Well, we're viewing it the same way as they are. So Everett has got to be the guy that the Titans overlook and just let him run wild down the middle of the field.
I love it, Joseph. Thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it. Keep spreading those Jake-isms around. I appreciate you, buddy.
I should have made the question for callers. I should have made it who needs to be the jack of all aces.
Yeah,
for
that's
the
really what you should have done.
The true.
Oh,
and
so
Joseph
dumb.
Nails it. Nails it with the jack of all aces needs to be Gerald Everett. And this is one of the highlight moments of why you brought this guy in. And yes, you got a flavor for it in terms of him being a guy that can get you yards after catching the screen game. That's something you want to continue to see throughout the year. But you brought him in as well so that he can be a legitimate chess piece. He can be somebody, when you get in man-to-man, one-on-one situations, that he is a nightmare when it comes to safeties and when it comes to linebackers having to cover him along with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. So this could be a huge game. Joseph, I think you nailed it right there.
All right, let's go to Colin in Tacoma. Colin, who's the most important player for the Hawks this weekend?
All righty, I think I got to go with the obvious answer. Our best player is always Russell Wilson. We are always calling him the MVP of our team, and bold predictions for this Sunday. He's going to be a part of 5 touchdowns. 2 are going to DK, 2 are going to Tyler, and he's going to rush for 1.
Okay, I love it. I love it. Now, what specifically do you want to see from Russ in this game outside of your prediction?
I just want to see him be accurate, and I want to see him be precise, and I want to see him be efficient. He was very efficient last week, very, very minimal incompletions. I think he almost has as many touchdown passes as he has incompletions. That's what I'm looking for him, and I'm looking for him to make good reads. When he doesn't see anything downfield and he's got room, I want to see him use his legs again and go get us some rushing yards. I think it's going to be a shootout. I'm going to be at the game Sunday, but I got faith in my boy Russ.
All right, Colin, I appreciate the call, man. I think that's a great point. And one of the things that obviously you want to see from this offense and Russell Wilson throughout the season is to be able to see that efficiency. And what Colin's really pointing to is it's not just – we've seen Russell Wilson be efficient and throw the ball downfield and have miraculous games, but you want to see him be efficient through – all right, the check down's there, hit the check down. You want to see the short to intermediate pass game to be alive and well and to see that continue. I mean, Russ on Sunday last week, I mean, he had some amazing throws and some amazing plays that he made in critical moments, but really it just felt like it was another day at the office. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, all right, here we go. Boom, I'm gonna distribute here, distribute there, and that's what you want to see. You want to see him be the point guard and make 4 to 5 big plays that have a tremendous impact on the game. But outside of that, distribute and let your playmakers make those big plays.
All right, last caller here, wrapping it up with Pat in Sparks, Nevada. Pat, who is the most important player for the Seahawks this weekend?
Happy Blue Friday to you guys both first.
You as well.
It is the jack of all aces is for sure Jamal Adams. He is going to have 2 sacks, 1 interception, launch himself back into the Defensive Player of the Year. He's going to be soaking up all that noise for the first time. He's going to be hearing all that noise from that crowd, and he's going to just love it.
Oh, yeah.
So
let's
I
go.
Think it's going to be Jamal Adams.
I'm with you.
And I think he's going to be all over the field. I just don't think this guy – I mean, it's going to be so much fun to watch this weekend. I just can't wait to see Jamal. That number 33, you're going to say, oh, there it is again. He hit the quarterback. He stripped the quarterback. Whatever. He's going to be the man.
All right, Pat. I love it, man. Thanks for calling. We've missed you. We haven't talked to you so far this season. So, Pat in Sparks, Nevada, we appreciate you giving us a call. And I think it's a great pick there. Now, one thing that I'm going to be curious about, Stacey, is Jamal Adams is a very emotional player. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, he brings the juice. He brings the energy. Now, will he be able to control and contain all that emotion and excitement that he has interacting and playing with the 12s and being able to channel that into positive energy and not get off of assignments because he's trying to make things happen? That's one thing to keep an eye on. I expect he will, and I agree with Pat that he is going to be a force out there this Sunday.
Jake and Stacey is presented exclusively by CarPros Kia Tacoma. We are taking your guys' calls every Monday and Friday. Don't forget. Also, don't forget the Mike Salk Show is back in the mornings each weekday, 6 to 10 a.m. Right now, it's time for 4 Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake, which two players are you hoping have monster games this Sunday?
Two of your highest paid players. This, to me, is a game that that Bobby Wagner and Jamal Adams have to go and show that they are worth the money that they are getting right now. These are two of the best players at their position in the NFL, and these are two guys that are monsters when they play downhill. They are monsters in terms of the impact that they can have in the running game. I want to see these two guys, the energy, the juice, the enthusiasm, and the level of play be at an all-time high when it comes to limiting and tackling Derrick Henry. If I'm Bobby Wagner, if I'm Jamal Adams, I have had this game circled on my calendar because this is a unique opportunity to go up against the league's best running back, one of the league's most offensive, explosive units, and to be able to shut it down and to be able to make a statement about who this defense is, what we can be, and we as individuals, yes, we're the very best at our position. I want to see Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams be violent, be impactful, and play at the line of scrimmage.
Second down. Jake, Derrick Henry is a monster. I mean, he's rushed for over 2,000 yards in multiple seasons. He's had 200-yard-plus games. What exactly makes him so difficult to stop?
Well, don't just take my word for it. Let's go to cut number 11 and hear what Pete Carroll had to say about how special Derrick Henry really is.
He's really unique. He's really unique. There have not been very many guys like him over the years, you know, because he's really fast and he's a big strider, you know, and just runs through things. It's not like he's an impact runner that he's blasting off of guys. He just keeps going. You just can't get him off stride because he's such a powerful back. And he has great instincts. His instincts of how to hit the line of scrimmage and how to use the opportunity of the blocking schemes, it's just about impeccable. And so he takes full advantage of what they do. And they're really committed to it, you know, and running football in their style. And the line blocks really well and the scheme is good. And they know how to put him in the right spot.
You know, you look at Derrick Henry and just his stature alone, being 6'3", 247 pounds. It's unlike anything we've seen in the NFL. There's been big backs before. You look at Eddie George and tall guys, but Derrick Henry with his size, his speed, and his ability to break tackles.
Built like a strong safety.
It's unbelievable. And his ability, yards after contact, he is the best in the NFL at yards after contact. So that means that you're going to have to bring your big boy pads. That means you're going to wrap up, and you're going to have a party to the ball. You're going to have multiple Seahawks flowing and tackling the ball carrier, group tackling. It's got to be the key to bringing down Derrick Henry. And it starts by making sure that you're winning the 6-inch battle up front with that defensive line, especially in the interior, making it very difficult for Derrick Henry to find room to run.
I was surprised Wyman yesterday when we were for the huddle talking about playing in the rain, which was going to be a factor this weekend, didn't say that it was that much harder to tackle in the rain. I guess I just expected guys to literally be like slippery.
I don't think that they factor that in.
Slipperier.
I mean, maybe if you're doused in mud and it's wet. But sure. Overall, I don't think so.
All right, third down. Let's go Washington with this one. Is the Washington Huskies passing defense the legitimate strength of this team?
That's what it's been touted as, and right now that's the lone thing that has stood thus far. But the truth is that they haven't faced legitimate passing attack. Montana didn't present one. Michigan didn't present one. And instead, they got busy getting running right through the Washington defense on the ground. I mean, they just out-physicaled you, so why even bother trying to air it out? Arkansas State's different. They get their job done offensively through the air and putting points up on the board, a traditional spread, throw-it-around type of scheme. So we'll see if this group can hold together. If not, then I don't know what strength you have on this team right now, what strength you have on this roster. And I can't even believe we're talking about the Washington Huskies this way, because the talent and everything that they had coming back doesn't just it doesn't even compute that this is the type of team that we have witnessed over the last 2 weeks. So Jimmy Lake, he's got to get this ship steered in the right direction, but he's going to have a unique challenge on his hands when it comes to Arkansas State and the way that they like to go about their business.
Well, and it's like you can't really change too much up. It's not like you can be like, oh man, we're really struggling with the run. Let's just turn to the pass. Like you've got banged up receivers or you've had guys transfer. Like you can't just suddenly shift your personnel.
Right.
You have to go with your plan. It just hasn't been effective. That offensive line has really surprised me.
No, it has been a shock, to be honest with you. And the best thing that they have going for it is that as many points as they put up, they also give up a ton of points as well. And so if there's any chance that this offense can show any type of life for the Huskies, it's going to be against Arkansas State. So you better hope that John Donovan's got something that he can do to put the ball in the end zone. And you would love to be able to see them get back to who they were pegged to be, which is a physical running football team that can take over games by being physical and wearing you down.
I always have a soft spot for Arkansas. Like as a state, not Arkansas State.
You have family in Arkansas, don't you?
Not that I know. My grandma's from Arkansas. Okay. Like from literally like the Ozarks in Arkansas. She slept in a bathtub when she was little.
Interesting
really
fact.
Wow.
Okay.
I don't know. This is probably like 150
weird flex,
years ago.
But okay.
Just kidding. Love you, Grandma. Fourth down. The Seahawks offense will have a monster day on Sunday if they can do blank. Fill in the blank, Jake.
The Seahawks offense will have a monster day on Sunday if they can attack and dominate man-to-man coverage. They will get their opportunities, one-on-one matchups with DK Metcalf, with Tyler Lockett, with Gerald Everett, with the rest of the skill group. Will they be able to win their one-on-one battles? I believe yes. I don't believe they have the personnel to match up with the Seahawks receivers or the skill group as a whole. I expect Russell Wilson and this crew to have a monster day because they will be beating up, wearing down the one-on-one opportunities that will be presented to them here coming Sunday. And that will be cover one. That will be in cover zero situations. Got to get ready for it. Got to have a great plan and be able to find your playmakers the ball in those situations. Have to have it. If they can get that done, they're going to put up well over 30 points.
Jake and Stacey is presented exclusively by CarPros Kia Tacoma. Coming up next, it's the best preview you've ever heard for week two Seahawks Titans, and it's in the form of a game show. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Titans, 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 Titans.
Apart from the Earth, Titan is the only celestial body in the solar system with liquid on its surface. Unlike our Earth, however, this liquid isn't water, but a mixture of liquid hydrocarbons, for the most part methane and ethane.
Oh my God.
I went with one of Saturn's moons, Titan.
Very abstract with this. Curtis makes the intros every week to our weekly game show, which also changes its name every week based on the opponent.
Last week it's Colts, Colts, Colts. This week it's Titans, Titans, Titans.
Next week it's Vikings, 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 Vikings. That's hard to say. Man.
I already
props
have that
you.
Intro made. It's another personal
favorite. Okay. So let's get this started. Curtis and Jake will go back and forth with some trivia about the Titans, about the Seahawks, everything to do with these two teams as we prepare you guys for week two. Curtis and Jake, you guys cannot look at the Mac and Jack's text line, so the texters are allowed to text in their answers if they want. Deal? Okay. No looking at it. No looking at it. Jake, you'll go first. Question number one. The Titans and Seahawks have met 16 times. True or false? It's easy. It's like a 50-50 shot. The Titans currently lead the series.
True.
That is true. That is true. All right.
Yes.
1-0, Jake. Question number two for you, Curtis. Who was the first head coach for the Tennessee Titans?
Ever? Oh, the Tennessee Titans?
Tennessee Titans.
That's Jeff Fisher.
That is correct.
I thought you meant their Houston days. I was like, wow.
No. Very specific. Tennessee Titans. All right, 1-1, back to Jake. Jake, question number three. In the entire history of the top single-game performances in matchups between the Seahawks and, I'm going Titans and Oilers here, so in the entire history of these two teams, the record in passing yards against the Seahawks is held by a former Seahawk and former Husky. Who is it?
former Seahawk, former Husky
Curtis,
receiving.
No, the passing single game passing performance against the Seahawks by a Titans or Oilers quarterback.
Oh, quarterback. Okay.
Is held by that quarterback was a former Seahawk and Husky.
Yeah.
Former Seahawk and
Jake,
Husky.
Yes. Well, like he was one. Like he was a former Husky who also spent some time with the Seahawks.
Yes, I know. I realize that. Warren Moon.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that, I was trying to.
I was really overthinking this one.
I knew that you knew the answer, which is why I was trying to make myself more clear. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
2-1. Jake leading. I'm going draft history with these
right,
next two.
Kind of.
Okay. Curtis. Former Husky, oh wait, I closed out of it. Former Husky Jake Locker was selected by the Titans in the first round in 2011. With which pick did Tennessee select him?
Oh, that's a good question.
Thank you.
A really good question.
Thank you. That is a great question.
He was top half of the first round.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to say...
There's no stealing, by the way, but you can say the answer for not a point if you want,
I'm going to say he was pick number 10.
Incorrect. Jake, you don't get to steal it, but do you want to guess?
My guess would have been, was he 7?
He was 8.
Oh, dang.
8 overall by Tennessee.
Woof.
Shut up.
Like that draft pick, I wish I could have it back.
No.
Come on.
No, all love.
Jake Locker, most overrated athlete in Seattle sports history.
But also like one of the most beloved. Like,
sure,
everyone I know
a nice
has
guy,
good things.
But he was not a good quarterback.
But would he have been a better quarterback if he would have sat on the bench for a little bit longer?
He was dynamic in college. Come on.
The most wins he had in the season was like 6.
I've always
seven.
Heard comparisons to Josh Allen. Like, what if, who are we talking to, Jake, when someone was like, what if Jake Locker would have been drafted now when technology and the way they train quarterbacks is just different?
He
could have been.
Yeah, I can't wait to go look back at the text line after I
but that would be
that hot take.
Don't look at it. Do not look at it. Okay,
that would be a hard thing to, you know, sell you on.
Jake,
if you could get into a time machine, he would have been a lot better.
You are currently leading 2-1.
Great
a chance
guy.
To pull ahead here with question number 5. When Locker was in Tennessee, he played behind which former Seahawks star?
Matt Hasselbeck.
Yes. Jake pulls ahead 3-1. Curtis.
Yes.
You need this. Before they became the Tennessee Titans in 1999, the Houston Oilers renamed themselves as what for 2 seasons?
They were the Tennessee Oilers.
Yes. Curtis pulling closer. It is
that
now 3-2 to Jake.
Story time. That was the first ever Seahawks game I went to as a kid. Was against the Tennessee
fact.
Oilers.
That
really?
Is a fun
John
fact.
Kitna was the starting quarterback that day. They won.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Jake, if DK Metcalf gets 813 yards this season, he passes which Seahawks player for most receiving yards in his first 3 seasons in Seattle? This is multiple choice. A, Joey Galloway. B, Steve Largent. C, Brian Blades.
Brian Blades.
Incorrect.
Oh! Man.
It is 3-2. Curtis. Curtis with a chance to tie
it. What was the correct answer on that one?
Joey Galloway. Steve Largent and Brian Blades both took off after their first, like, 1-2 seasons or so, with Steve Largent becoming a Pro Bowler in, I think, his 3rd or 4th. Okay.
Man,
Curtis, a chance to tie it and send it to our tiebreaker.
Yeah, let's go.
From something I said in the show today.
No.
Best kind of question.
Since 2012, what is the Seahawks record when winning by 4 or more at halftime?
65-2.
That is correct. Curtis has tied the game. Final minute of our quiz. We are going to the tiebreaker. Here's how the tiebreaker works. The tiebreaker is going to be a buzz in, a buzzer answer. So you will buzz in.
This is my domain.
Okay. You will buzz in by saying your name. Don't shout out the answer. Just say your name and get ready. Turn your mic on and have it ready. Do not say your name until I finish the question. The last word of the question is the word team, okay? Marcus Mariota was the starter for Tennessee the last time the Seahawks met them. Mariota led the Ducks to the national championship game in the 2014-15 season, where they lost to which team?
Curtis.
Yeah, Jake.
Ohio State.
Curtis. Curtis, no. It's awkward because you made Jake so mad and upset, and I'm in the room with him, and you're not.
Did I just lose?
Yes.
Oh, come.
That's what we call a comeback.
Jake. Sorry.
Hey.
Sorry.
You can lean your hat on this and look towards next week, Jake.
You know what? You guys are now tied in our overall series for this season.
You.
Jake took week one for Colts, and Curtis takes Titans. So
unbelievable.
Man, good.
Joey Galloway. I thought for sure it was Brian Blaze.
No.
It wasn't.
Joey Galloway, doesn't he have like a record for rookie season for a Seahawk receiver?
Probably.
Yards? Something like
really
that.
He had a phenomenal rookie season. He had 1,000 yards.
Oh, sorry, Jake. All right. We're wrapping up our show with What I Need to Know. You guys know how it works. Send in your question. Any question you have, 710-710, the Mac and Jack's text line. Turning it over to you guys for What I Need to Know. It's coming your way next.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Driven by Car Pros Kia of Tacoma.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Now, this is when you guys text in your questions, any question you want, 710-710, and instead you've choose violence. You have choosed insults. Jake, I was pulling for you. You were set up. Shame on you, Stacy, from the 425. Shame on you, 425.
No.
Shame on you. I didn't know. I think it was a fair win. I think, you know, another texter has it right. Jake, you had a 3-1 lead like Cleveland and you
Shame
blew
on
it.
You.
Shame on you.
Yeah.
Blew a 3-1 lead.
You're right. I'm better than that. I can't.
You're better than this.
I can't allow that to happen. I can't leave the door open for Curtis Rogers to get to the bonus round, which I know if
he'll
we get
dominate.
To that.
He'll dominate.
He'll dominate because Stacy makes it extremely hard trivia.
I'm like the Mariners
I'm
and
which
sorry.
Curtis,
which
extremely
Curtis
hard
dominates.
Trivia from a national college football game from 2014 and 15.
I'm like the Mariners and extras. You don't want to let me get a runner on second base because they're going to score.
Of the Mariners, that takes us to our first question for What I Need to Know.
Been 2-0
from 206. What I Need to Know, regardless of playoffs or not, how should we feel about this Mariners season?
I honestly think you should feel very positive about this group. You saw some steps forward. Ty France, you see that he is a legitimate professional hitter in this league. JP Crawford, there was huge questions about JP Crawford coming into the season. I mean, pretty much everybody was ready to move on from JP Crawford. There's this huge talk and conversation that shortstop. You've got to address that position. JP steps up in a big way, and now you know that you have the guy of the future there at shortstop, and now it allows you to be flexible with where you want to go at second base, third base, you know, those types of things. But I believe that you have a young core that's been built together. It's not the final piece of it, but you've got a good group that you can move forward with, and you've gotten your answers in terms of where you need to build around, I believe. So that to me is a successful year, and I know people don't want to hear, you know, John Stanton's line about they've outdone expectations because you could have changed and had an effect on what the expectations were for this team this season. But they've done just that in the mindset of development. And Scott Services have done an excellent job in terms of managing this group and creating the right culture. So overall, I believe it's been a very positive step forward. Now, the next part is what I believe is the hardest part, which is transitioning from rebuild mode, developmental mode, to now we're focused on winning and propelling this thing forward and truly building a winner that has the expectations of getting to the playoffs.
What I Need to Know, Jake, are you ever going to go back to modeling classes?
Okay.
Great question from the text line.
The people want to know.
I mean, Jake, it's a fair question.
The solid answer is no. I was put in those classes by my mother to give me the experience just to expand my horizons and quickly found out that that was not a road I was willing to travel
down. I feel like we have turned the tables on high school tropes by us like shoving a quarterback into a locker, metaphorically speaking, and taking his lunch money.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys can take it easy, and Stacy, just wait till this turns back around on
you're
you.
The one who at random today was like, my grandma slept in a bathtub in Arkansas.
Wait, what? Like
why? It's something a four-year-old walks up to a stranger and says, and it's like, I don't know how to respond to that.
I don't know. I don't know. When I hear the word Arkansas, I think of her telling me that story. I just said it. The words just came out of my mouth. I couldn't stop it. What I Need to Know, now speaking of the Mariners, we talked about how you should feel about the season, regardless of playoffs or not. So this one's related, and it kind of ties into an answer that I would have. What I Need to Know, when do the M's, a top 10 revenue team, move out of the bottom 10 spenders in MLB? I think it better start happening this offseason.
Better.
It will. They will.
You're confident they will.
I am very confident. I am very confident they will.
What makes you confident they will?
Because I don't believe they really have a choice.
I think that...
I don't. Like, if they don't do that, that everybody that is on their side right now and has been with them every step of the way in terms of the rebuild, not the 20-year history, but saying, okay, you're going to take this step back and you've been a fan of everything that they've done, turn this farm system around, here's where they are now, they've exceeded expectations, they're moving everything in a positive direction. And now you're at this point where you need to show that you are willing to put down the resources in order to propel this thing forward in the right direction. And you decide not to do that. You go the cheap route. You're going to lose a lot of people. And the patience and the willingness and all that, you're not going to have it. So I really don't think that they have a choice. And they said that they're going to do it. So if the ball is in their court, and I'm putting my faith that they will.
What I worry is that it'll be a moving target. Like, the ball keeps rolling.
It won't
be good enough. Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. I'm worried that it'll be something that is just kind of normalized is not the right word to use here, because that's for different kinds of conversations. But hey, this offseason, you know, we're really pushing for it, but we know we're just starting to get into contention. So we're really going to spend next offseason, but, you know, we didn't need to this year. And then the target just kind of keeps moving. And I also think that there's people that are against spending because they think it's spending for the sake of spending, which it doesn't have to be. And you can point to losing records or struggles right now for teams that are top 10 in spending. Mm-hmm. But overall, overwhelmingly, teams spend to win.
You're right.
To get those stars. And Seattle's probably going to have to overspend to get stars to come to Seattle.
Yeah, they will have to. There's no question about that. And when you talk about this group, I mean, the conversation was, hey, we're going to spend however much money was it that John Stanton had said about the renovations that they were going to do?
$50 million.
Okay, so you're going to spend $50 million to make that experience better for people in Seattle and outside of Seattle to come experience the All-Star Game. Well, that same money should be spent on making this team better. If that much money, if not more, to make this team better and a great group heading into that year, heading into next year. I mean, it's just, it has to be done.
From the 206, I need to know, which Ole Miss Rebel has the better day, A.J. Brown or D.K. Metcalf? I will add to this person's question that D.J. Reed, starting corner for the Seahawks, is questionable for this game.
I still think it's D.K. Metcalf. I know they have Janoris Jenkins. I know that Mike Vrabel said that he was very high on Christian Fulton, their cornerback of last week. It felt like he had a pretty good performance, but I still think DK Metcalf has a coming out party here in week 2. So I'm gonna take DK in this one.
I think I'm also gonna take DK in this one, just because that Tennessee Titans secondary looked so bad and struggled so much, and I also think that the Seahawks defensive line is going to be able to help out that secondary a little bit more than Tennessee's will. So we'll get a bit of a helping hand.
Can we address this? There's a 425 that says apparently Saul proposed a trade for Marquez from the Rockies.
Herman Marquez.
He proposed trading Kyle Lewis, Ty France, and Emerson Hancock to the Rockies. Would you do this trade from the 425?
Not a chance.
No way. No way would you do this
trade.
And
it's not because I'm in love with like Kyle Lewis, Ty France, or Emerson Hancock.
No. Nope.
You got to get a little more bang for your buck if you're giving up that kind of package.
Marquez is a very good pitcher. Is he? Would you consider him a dominant ace in this league?
No. He's probably a number two.
You're also going to need to replace runs that Kyle Seager was giving you this year. And Ty France, you know, even if he cooled off a little bit, at least a power hitter. Like, at least he hits.
You're going to give up Ty France? Like, nah. I'm Kyle Lewis and Emerson Hancock, honestly, it wouldn't hurt me terribly to see those guys packaged up in a deal to get a very good player in return. Ty France, sorry, I'm not doing that. Nope.
All right, that'll do it for us today. For Jake Heaps, for Curtis Rogers, I'm Stacey Ross. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Yeah, you have nothing to lean your hat on.